Welcome to the International Schools Podcast, where we discuss all aspects of technology and life in international schools, with new episodes live every 2 weeks. This podcast is sponsored by Apps Events. We're a Google for Education partner and active since the launch of Google Apps for Education in 2006. We're a team of former educators and all experts in helping schools integrate Google into their schools and their classrooms. All training is customized for each school, and we make sure it has a lasting impact. Literally thousands of educators worldwide have earned their Google Educator certification with us, with our certification boot camps, and these take place every month and get your staff certified quickly. We also host Google Summits, which are fun, two-day conference-style events with concurrent sessions and keynotes delivered by experienced Google trainers, teaching on a broad range of topics using G Suite both in the classroom and in the school. Check it out over at appsevents.com, and we can bring any of these events to your school, which is an amazing way to build a Google community amongst your staff to support each other, plus to increase the profile of yourself and your school. The podcast is also brought to you by Acer for Education. People ask us what Chromebooks we recommend for schools, and after trying them all, quite literally, we always recommend Acer. We've been to Acer headquarters in Taiwan to be part of product discussions, and they're genuinely the best thought out, most cost-effective, and most importantly, durable devices out there. They're always innovating, including the first tablet running Chrome and the first convertible touchscreen Chromebook. The latest version of this is a Spin 11, which has a stylus and two cameras, and we highly, highly recommend it for schools. They, of course, have a full range of Windows laptops, and for esports fans, their Predator range is second to none. If you'd like more information, please just leave your email over at gg.gg/Acer Education. That's gg.gg/Acer Education, and we'll get right back to you. And now, on to the interview. Guys, welcome to the International Schools Podcast. So 2 weeks ago, I think exactly, we had a school closure episode featuring Tim Evans, Nicole Nutzling, Jason Regan, and Thomas Hammerlund. And really fortunate to have the same guests back 2 weeks later, so we can have a follow-up. It's interesting. 2 weeks ago, I'm in Europe. Our other guests are in Hong Kong, South Korea, Japan, and Bahrain. And back then, it wasn't much happening here. And now, how 2 weeks have changed. Now we are ground zero. I'm in Prague. We have a lot, well, basically quarantine. We can go from home to work, which I'm in the office now. We can buy food and go to the doctor or pharmacy. Everything else is closed. They just brought in a rule yesterday. You have to wear a face mask when you're outside. There's obviously no, you can't socialize. You got to keep 2 meter distance from people. They brought in a rule, actually quite a good rule, that from 10 till 12 is only for over 70s and or over 65, I think, to go to the shops. So it's kind of every day something new is coming. So really interesting to catch up with everyone. And we're going to see what's happened, what's happened in everyone's countries and in everyone's schools. We're recording this on Hangouts Meet, so everyone's probably seen Google has released the premium features of G Suite Enterprise for Education to schools. So we've now got this, which gives us the ability to record. So good to do this. So first of all, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I think it'd be great just to go around the four of you and get an update. First of all, let's talk about what's happening in your country. We'll talk about what's happening in your school and things in a minute, but let's go, like, in the last 2 weeks, what's changed? How has it affected your movement? How has it affected your life? So maybe start with Thomas, and then Tim, Nicole, and Jason.
2 weeks ago, when we first had our meeting, there was, I think, one case in Osaka, maybe. It wasn't very serious. At least on this side, on the Tokyo side, there were more cases. Since then, like, cases have spiked. The number of people who have been diagnosed spiked. I haven't been going out in these 2 weeks because I've been pretty busy with my classes. So I don't really know what's happening on the outside, but it seems to me that things have kind of peaked and are leveling off, at least. Because there was a school gathering at the public school across the street from my house today. It was like the where you have the parents come in before school starts kind of thing. Our school is planning on opening in 2 weeks after spring break. So that's where we're at.
Fantastic. So Are all the teachers in country now, or some of them coming back?
No. There's I know we have one teacher in New Zealand. She had to go back for family reasons, and then one teacher went back to her home country of Singapore. But so I don't know how that's going to work with. I don't know what the quarantine situation is like, but right, yeah, right. Two teachers.
Great, Tim. How's it? You look like you're back in Hong Kong from the back.
Yeah. Hi, Dan. Yeah, no. So I'm back in Hong Kong now. So 2 weeks ago, I was in Spain. Those of you who've seen the news, Spain has it's escalated. It's pretty scary there at the moment. We were lucky end of last week, myself and the family came back to Hong Kong. There does seem to be a bit of normality in Hong Kong within context. You can go about. Hong Kong have been brilliant when it comes to every single person on the street now has a mask on. Everybody's hand sanitizer. Everywhere you go, you've got the mats on the floor that you step through again with the sanitizer in them. So we do actually feel pretty safe here, and we're glad we did make the move, especially seeing some of the numbers that Spain and Southern Europe are pulling in. School-wise, I feel like an online learning veteran, and we've finished 7 weeks now, and it is running smoothly. Teachers doing an awesome job. Students have really bought into the expectations and things.
Let's go to the teaching in a sec. But first of all, let's just talk about the situation. So, did you have to go back to Hong Kong, or you just chose to get away?
No, we just chose. So we penciled in the end of this week, which would be around the 20th. But then we just saw what was happening. We just thought, look, Dan, we got a little baby, so we just thought like, now's a chance for us to get out, which we were really, really lucky. I mean, as of the night of the 15th, every single person who comes into Hong Kong now needs to go into a self-quarantine. Right. That's a bracelet around your wrist that's tracked to an app. So they're really taking it seriously. And rightly so, because, I mean, I do feel a bit sorry for Hong Kong in the way that everybody left, and I put my hands up there. I was one of them. And the numbers really steadied out to a couple of cases a day. And now it's spiking again now where people are returning. They've been vigilant for a month. So I think it's only right that people accept, which people are, that they're put into a quarantine.
But you don't have to do a quarantine because you came back before a certain day.
We didn't. So that's it. So we missed the deadline, if you want to call it that. But I mean, we are weary. Do you know what we did? Like, you spoke to someone, I think it was Idris Elba, wasn't it? And the actor, he's got it and he's not showing any symptoms. You just don't know, do you? And you don't want to be that person. So we are mixing. We're doing that social distancing. We are not just keeping an eye on things.
Great. And Nicole, how's it going in Bahrain?
Yeah, big changes as of yesterday. So the Crown Prince announced that we now have 11 kind of specific rules to follow. So restaurants are closed. All recreational facilities are closed. Goodbye, gym. Pools are closed. The only thing that's open right now are shopping malls. They've left that open. But again, social distancing, he's really trying to reinforce. And then they've extended this for at least another month. As of today, we'll see. They keep kind of pushing on and on. We had Parliament went in to try and get it closed till the end of the year, and they lost, I think it was 18 votes to 16. And so it was really close. So that's just, we wait and see what happens. But yeah, it's very much stay at home. We're allowed to go to the shops to get food, but again, there's hours that elderly are allowed to go and have priority. And other than that, we're kind of on lockdown.
Yeah, great. Jason?
Well, things here in Korea, right after we recorded, they pushed us back a bit more. So we're going into spring break next week. We just found out 2 days ago that April 6th is our projected start back date. But like what Tim was saying, the worry is people are coming back and they've been in these other 100-plus countries. And so a lot of our teachers have come back because we thought we were going to be starting on the 23rd. And so they had to do a 14-day quarantine before that. And some folks were unhappy about that. But at the same time, other folks understood. And so but outside, slowly getting back to normal. There's some restaurants who have gone out of business. There's some places that have just, I know, will not survive, but something will come and take its place at some point when things are back to somewhat normal. But in general, there have been these clusters around, and that's these community clusters is what they're calling them. And so that's pretty much where the main amount of these cases are coming from. So there was a call center 2 weeks ago or last week that something like 60 or 80 people were found positive in this call center on the same building. And two of them were attached to that church from a month or so ago. So it's just showing again that whole community transfer thing. But where everyone's practicing social distancing quite a bit. I've even seen people like walk on the other side of the street almost to avoid getting in contact with other people. So most people are staying home, even if they're not even showing symptoms or even been tested. A lot of people are just staying home and working from home. But we're noticing an issue that the internet is under a lot of strain. But other than that, things are just kind of pushing along. And now in order to go back to school, we have to fill out a form basically saying that we declare where we've been and if we haven't left, you know, and different things. So we have to send in information to the Ministry of Education. Each family does.
Yeah, definitely. So to finish off kind of the European perspective, I mean, it's really, it's kind of been late. I mean, the UK just yesterday announced they were closing all schools. All England, actually, Wales and Scotland had already closed their schools. Here, the schools have been closed for about 2 weeks in Czech Republic. And, you know, we've got the same things, like I mentioned, you know, we can go home and work. It was weird, like overnight, like the first day of the quarantine, maybe half the people had masks. And next day, like 95%. Then they just brought in a rule, so everyone's wearing masks now. And again, like you said, Nicole, we've got no sports facilities. It's really tough. You know, I like to play squash and go to CrossFit. But now I'm just, I'm running, you know, we can still go out and take a walk. I don't know what it's like where you guys are, but we can. I live kind of outside Prague in the countryside, so you know, it's easier, but you can go out and get fresh air here still, you know, which as long as that doesn't go away. I'm not sure about running with a mask on now. I don't think I can manage that. It'd be a little bit hard. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, Jason, you mentioned before we talk about schools, the economic impact. I mean, that's the thing, which is, I mean, if I take our company, you know, we're an education consultant and it's brutal, you know, like after we spoke, it was a tough week. Everything canceled. Our next two events were Rome and Seattle, which could have been the worst two places. Like every event we've got is on hold now. You know, we've got events in June, July, which hopefully could come back. And it's been tough, you know, really tough. We're transitioning to doing a lot of online teaching, which is great. And we're doing more and more. We did our first online boot camp. We're doing an educator level one. We've got loads of work with Google. So it's building back up, you know, and it, you know, in a way, there's always something good that comes out of a bad situation and learning to do online learning. And hopefully we can keep all our team going. But it's like you mentioned, like, especially if you own a restaurant or a shop or any kind of small business that, you know, revolves around anything to do with social interactions, it's tough, you know. And I think that the economic ramifications are going to be huge around the world for this, especially in Europe. I think, you know, China definitely, but I think Europe's going to be the worst. Yeah, how was it in Spain, Tim? I mean, it must be tough there for businesses, and plus the economy is not doing that amazing. It's not like they can give huge amounts of handouts to people anyway.
It's really bad there. Just my sister-in-law, she works for an airline. She's been let go, and she's been there for a couple of years. And like she was saying, I mean, she's late 30s, and she's tourism all her life. Do you know what I mean? So it was, she's just the reality is she'll do well to find a position in the next 3 or 4 months. So that's why I keep talking back to education. We are very lucky that within what it is, our jobs are pretty secure.
Although I know some teachers in China who've been told, who had to take unpaid leave straight away, you know.
Yeah, but they,
we've been lucky. I know a few teachers, and yeah, we had a virtual pub night on Hangouts last night, which is, it's becoming a thing. I don't know if you guys are doing it, but a lot of my friends I'm noticing it more and more. And my friend Netflix, who's a pilot, and they were just told yesterday to take 3 months unpaid leave, and it could be longer. And that's it, you know. It wasn't an option. It was just like 3 months. You're not getting paid from next month. Sorry. I mean, I think I heard Norwegian Airlines laid off 90% of their staff. So it's tough, you know. Like it's tough if you know. And hopefully, you know, schools are gonna keep going. And I think it's encouraging to hear what you guys are saying about situations in your countries in Asia. It's definitely, you know, better. It's got a lot worse in Europe, and it's starting to get better. I heard today was potentially the first time in China with no new cases, which was really interesting. Yeah. So cool, guys. Let's get on to schools. Like, first of all, let's go the same way. First of all, I'm keen to see like how you've adapted, because it was all very new. It was just kind of happening. I think even Thomas hadn't even schools hadn't even closed when we spoke. Like, how is it gone? And then we'll talk about a few specific things, but just great to hear your story about what you guys have been doing in the last 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, like last time we met, it was my first day, and I had never done online teaching before, except for a few days in Taiwan when we had some typhoon days. But it was a different group of kids. They were in high school, and now I'm in elementary. And it's been interesting. Like you said, it's the good thing is that I'm learning a lot about becoming a better communicator online. My directions are getting more clear, I think, and concise. But it's been really tough. I don't know about the rest of you, but we're kind of open. So I release my assignments the night before, and then the students can just kind of work on them freely the next day. And I feel like I'm always trying to play catch up, and I'm not ever getting caught up with replying to students and commenting. And if we were to do this again, I think I might suggest that we sort of block it off like a normal day. I don't know. I really don't know what would work, but maybe it's just me and I have to plan my time better.
Yeah.
But we only have, tomorrow's our last day and then we go on spring break and we're supposed to come back after that. So we'll see what happens.
Great. Okay. Tim?
Yeah. So when we spoke before, I mentioned, so we would have been 5 weeks in. So we're now just finishing 7 weeks, but it's from day one, we went with the schedule. And because I joked about online veteran there, but so people have reached out within our wider school group as well. And my first bit of advice is that get your schedule, get your routine down. And at first, yeah, it's for kids, but as educators, well, we need that routine. So like Thomas mentioned, you need to know like 8 o'clock, 8:30, you're on a call. You know, then you have 2 hours to answer. Feedback's key as well. So it's just that idea of we know where we are and where we stand. Because I think it is long term, and we said from the beginning this is going to go longer. So as you say, in Europe we're 7 weeks now. Europe are going to be doing the same. I can see they'll be hitting 2 months online. So just start as soon as you can, get a schedule, and we just lay down expectations, like I mentioned the other week. Get the expectations so everybody within the community, students, parents, teachers, understand what is expected. Use as little, again, as little tools as possible, really, but use them well. That's what we've done. I mean, you mentioned about Google Meet recording. So there was a lot of push, let's go to Zoom, but we never did. And thankfully, it's paying off now. But the idea of jumping between platforms, and we're trying to keep everything between in the Google ecosystem.
There's a real difference in schools, you know. Well, we'll talk about that a bit later, but there's a real, you know, a lot of theories between letting teachers choose or having a school-wide policy, you know.
And I think with a school-wide policy, it's great for people like myself who are there to support. So we know exactly what grades are using and what teachers are using. So one, I can go and I've had to go and swat up on things and make sure I know exactly what's what and everything, and try and get a contact within Google or what have you, so we can reach out to them. But again, it's that idea of everyone understands the role we play, the routine we're in and everything, just to get some sort of familiarity, some sort of schedule going.
Yeah, actually this podcast helped me enormously because I was able to talk to people in Asia who have done this for a while, and I used everything you said, took it to heart. So the first 2 weeks were overwhelming. It was a bit of a challenge to say the least, but I think now I've gotten into at least starting the week with it very simplified for the kids. I listened to what they needed. They need like an overview of the week, everything all in one spot. And then I kind of go Google Classroom from there. And same thing, setting up a schedule so they know I'm online from 8 until 10 and then 11 till 1. So they expect feedback and they know. I kind of push them to certain areas in order to make it easier for me. So like if they want to ask me a question, it has to go to our Google, like we have a chat, so that I'm only looking there to answer questions. And it doesn't just fill up the Google Classroom feed and stream. So it's taken a while, but figuring out how to kind of compartmentalize it and get the kids, pushing them into the right spots, has helped enormously. Again, school-wide policy, even us, we have Seesaw in the lower grades in Google Classroom, and that's been a headache I think if I was starting this from scratch as a school, I'd pick one, like pick what you're going to use and just rock it out, because it's been a lot of like overlapping and going back and forth. And same thing like you, Tim, the people, our tech guys here are having a hard time because there's so many, like Seesaw works very differently than a Google Classroom. And so they're having to kind of reset everything and rework things to make it happen. So, but the kids are getting the hang of it. They're doing really good. Keep it simple. Thank you, Tim. That's my motto right now. And yeah, we're getting better as we go, hopefully.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it from a little bit more of a secondary school perspective. And even though I have children in the PYP primary years sort of thing, I agree the Seesaw to Google Classroom is a bit of an adjustment, especially for your kids who are, it's their first year using Google Classroom, when they're used to the flow of a Seesaw. I'm 5 weeks in and still can't figure out my own children's Seesaw feed. And so trying to work that out. But what we noticed was over the course of the last couple of weeks, where the first week, every grade level had their own document that they shared. And then the students got that and it told what they did. Over time, the feedback kept coming back saying, why can't we just use the same document and just change the grade level that's off or whatever? And so what's happened is over time, that's happened by natural flow. And so I would say that's been really good. What we've done is we've assigned our Google Meet codes or our Zoom codes directly to office hours, and they're static. So you can come and go as you need to, and that sort of thing. Our school did eventually upgrade their Zoom subscription because the 40-minute cutoff was starting to really be a burden for Zoom us.
Isn't it free for the unlimited version now? Or is it,
it is now, but that's a new development. So we're on that now. But what was happening was teachers were getting to 40 minutes and they were whipping out their credit card and paying for a month right there for $15, you know? And so now we're in the process of working that part out too. So, you know, for the older students, they've liked the Zoom because the teachers have a lot more control over what happens in the rooms and they can have the breakout rooms and that kind of stuff. But, you know, and we're having some issues with bandwidth at the moment. And I'm not sure if that's just traffic or if it's deliberate. I don't know. I don't know yet. And so we're just kind of working through that. But so, you know, in general, the students like being able to see each other. They like being able to see their teacher. That common document that people are sharing, as opposed to everybody kind of doing whatever, that's been very, very helpful for us. And I think in the future, looking at creating some sort of LMS framework where that's already kind of done as a database versus just a freestanding document would be fantastic. And so that could be a potential idea for someone business minded to do, but you know, some way to create an online distance. And I'm sure some of the other LMSs have that kind of capability. You know, Canvas and some of these other things probably have that. But as a school who wasn't ready to go online, we weren't even thinking in that direction. And so we've done the best we can with the Google Docs that we have.
Yeah, it's interesting. It brings that kind of next point I wanted to talk about, which is what system to use for online teaching. You know, it's interesting because I've played around with Zoom quite a lot last week, and I honestly, even though I'm a Google guy, I'd say Zoom is more. It's got more features, definitely. My general philosophy is though, if you're in the Google ecosystem, something has to be 50 to 100% better than the Google alternative to move outside. Now, I don't think it's 50 to 100% better, you know. So that's why I kind of, you know, if you're in Google, it's just so much easier to use the Google alternative, which is Hangouts Meet. But I mean, there's a few alternatives. I mean, Hangouts against Zoom. A lot of schools are using Seesaw especially for younger grades. A lot of, like you mentioned, Jason, a lot of LMSs have online teaching. Schoology, and I was chatting to International School of Luxembourg, they're using Schoology. I think you mentioned Canvas. Like, what are people finding, like, you know, in terms of what the best alternative is? And I mean, there's a bit of a mix here. Some of you, the teachers, have got some choice themselves. Like, what do you guys all, a bit of an open discussion about, you know, open choice and which is the best system?
For me, I think the best system is the system you had in place before, if you had one. Yep. Simply because the training's already been done potentially in person, so you're not having to remotely train people, which is just another hurdle. Yep. So have a look at what tools you're currently using, and like you said, unless it's 50%, 100% an improvement, I wouldn't look to address it, because the last thing you want as well is to go back to a tool. I'm always aware of pushing out a tool and it to be a complete failure, and then saying, actually, we're going back to that original tool. That's a challenge with teachers, let alone parents as well. So we've really tried to stay within Google as much as possible, because the kids are used to it. The calendar, Google Classroom, send out a links. And even now you've got the new addition of live streaming as well, which helps if we're doing like wider school assemblies, which we have done. We sent out a stream link, so there's no actual kid-student interaction per se. It's just watching it. But again, it's all within the system. I know Europe are very much on Microsoft. I spoke to a lot of schools in the UK. it looks pretty good, Microsoft Teams. I've never actually
it is good. Yeah, anyone else, any other thoughts?
I would second what Tim said. We use Seesaw, and Seesaw had a pretty big update right in the middle just last week, I think, and it kind of threw the kids for a loop, because they added a way for teachers to send the work back to the kids, to kind of reject work or send it back for improvement. But the kids did not understand, and it totally threw them off. And that trying to explain to them through email what was happening was a big challenge.
And I haven't used Seesaw. Is it mostly for younger grades? Is it kind of primary focused?
Yeah, it's mostly a portfolio,
right? But it has a web conferencing facility in it. No, it doesn't. So you can record a lesson though still.
Well, what I've been doing is I've been recording my lessons and then uploading them as a link. So I've been putting them on YouTube as unlisted and then putting the link in Seesaw.
Right. Got it. And what about guys? Google Classroom. Who's using Google Classroom right now, and how's that going in this circumstances? Yeah, Jason, do you want to kick off? And then Nicole?
Yeah, I'm using Google Classroom, and we were using it before, so it was not. It's a tool we're already using. Yeah. So it's been good. It was not something we had to teach the students how to use. The ones who knew how to use Google Calendar already were familiar with that. We did have to remind them that if they click on the calendar up in the corner, they could see all of their classwork, but their classwork had to be put in. So that's where the issue was, is we had a lot of teachers who were not using it regularly. They were using it on one-off type situations. And so for them, that was a challenge, was to figure out, okay, if I put it in the stream, does that mean it's this? And so there was a bit of a learning curve for some teachers because they hadn't experimented with it enough, even though it was our platform of choice. So teachers who have done well with flipped classrooms to start with have been excelling at this kind of thing. But then there's also been a lot of people who've really used this time to upskill themselves. And I'm not the ed tech person at my school. However, I get lots and lots and lots of emails all day long and questions and things. And that's okay. I'm happy to do that too, and to help support with that, because I've been flipping classrooms for many years, you know. And so, but yeah, Google Classroom has met my needs. I've been able to upload videos. I've been able to do screencasts. I've been able to host different things. So that's worked well. And my students all know that's where they go. That's the single point of contact. And I think going back and then being in school again, I'm hoping to get everyone on board to that, even in person or not in person. Now the issue is this hybrid situation of students who might still be in quarantine when we start school. And so now, and teachers even, and how do we handle that? And so that's our next big mountain, but sorry, didn't want to go ahead too far, but Google Classroom has been working for us.
And Google, I mean, it has, our kids were not completely kind of into the Google Classroom. I teach grade 5, so they're just starting to play with it. Secondary is rocking this out. Like, Google Classroom's worked amazing for them. We're still kind of working the bugs out. The stream has been hard for the kids because right now I have specialists who are sending, we're still doing PE, art, music. And so they'll send me an email as to what they want posted, which is great, posted on the classroom, but then the stream pushes it further and further down. So the kids lose it and get a little bit lost as to like, what am I doing where? And you have to think too, there's a lot of anxiety for them. They're not in a phase where they can just sit down and kind of troubleshoot. They kind of get a little bit freaked out. So it's learning how to simplify. I've made 101, I think, how to submit an assignment, how to do this. So Screencastify is saving me on that, because I think we need to think too, like they're nervous right now. They're just trying to figure out how to navigate the world as it is. So the less cognitive kind of load I have on them figuring out Google Classroom, the better. But you were talking too, is like with some of the specialists, and we were wondering if we thought maybe having a central, like using Google Suites, like having a website, and then just having all the links. So like a link to My Classroom, a link to music, a link to art, so that they did have that one place, and then using Google Classroom as kind of the go-to, but centralizing it. So I like it. It's happening. It's working.
Yeah, I think it suffers a little bit from a lack of a kind of a top-down ability to kind of coordinate it for the whole school, like a fully featured LMS. I mean, Google's kind of resisted that, I think, like looking for third-party developers to do that. But still, I think, you know, it's simple. It's a simple to use, generally speaking, compared to any other learning management system. Great. Anyone else on Google Classroom? No, guys, otherwise, where do you all stand on? Obviously, we've got a bit of a mixture between real-time teaching and just recording lessons and students doing it anytime and kind of, you know, obviously flipped classrooms. Where do you all stand, you know, a few weeks in on what you think the best approach is based on what you've done yourself and what you've heard of a school's doing? Who wants to jump in first? Okay, I'm going to nominate someone. Jason.
I'll go in. Sorry. I'll break the ice on that one. It's actually really dependent on the subject that we found. There are some subjects that have been much more successful having live sessions, having face-to-face, when I say face-to-face, you know, video conference type situations. More practical classes, it's much easier to have a video lesson that's sent to them and then they can go and work off the screen, hopefully. So I would say having a balanced approach, because I've had a few face-to-face sessions with my students. And in the end, it ended up being just a question answer type thing because they weren't there for a lecture. They weren't there for me to stand up at a whiteboard and talk about whatever, which I shouldn't be doing anyway. But so that I would say more of the, as questions came across on Google Classroom, I would make a quick screencast and pop it up there as the answer, because a lot of times it was multiple people asking the same question. So I'd do a 2 or 3 minute video and that tended to answer. And now I have a huge library of videos that I can use in the future, you know? And so I found that's been what works best for me, to have a dynamic sort of flexible situation. But we do have some teachers who, let's say, are teaching, you know, seniors or grade 11 or 12 or 13, whichever grade you're using, and they're doing mathematics. They need to be there going over, you know, new concepts and things like that, because missing 6 weeks of instruction is not really possible in that situation. So for them, they're still taking their full class period to work with, and a video lesson would not help them at all in that situation. So I do think it does depend on the subject.
Yeah, as the same with us here, Jason, is that balance it is. And you know your students and how they react to stuff. But we've been big with the feedback from parents, always reaching out to parents for feedback. And they really appreciate those face-to-face video conferencing calls. They just feel, maybe it's more so in Hong Kong where there potentially is the one child, that it is their way to actually connect with their peers. So some teachers, they do like a check-in, so it might be more of a well-being focus or a counseling kind of feel to it, especially to kick off the day. They're using it as an attendance one as well. So I was on a call this morning at 8:30 with grade 4, and I was impressed actually. 8:30 in the morning, they were all there. I jumped on a minute late, they were all there. Microphones muted, cameras off, all ready to go and everything. And there must have been like 95% attendance. So that's that kind of way of just checking in. They see a familiar face. But like you said, yeah, you just got to get the balance, whatever you need, whatever the topic is and the age or factors.
Yep. Are you guys using Hangouts and other tools to have like staff chats, leadership team, like things like that? Is this a regular, because I know some schools it's kind of a regular thing. Are you guys getting together regularly with the other staff online? Yeah. What's that? Yeah, Nicole.
Yeah, we have common planning time once a week. So we'll have it scheduled in so that we get on Google Hangouts and kind of go over an update for the week. So that's, we've been doing that chat wise. I know secondary does full secondary meetings where they do a little check-in and go around. It's kind of similar to what they were saying about, it's a wellness check too. It's kind of hard sometimes to check in with your teachers if you're just sending an email out. So I think that they're using it a little bit for that as well, to see that we're still surviving and we're okay.
Yeah. I don't know about you guys, but I found since this coronavirus thing, like WhatsApp has got crazy. All these kind of WhatsApp groups I'm a member of, my friends, like, and colleagues. It's like, it's just a regular back channel. I mean, you know, I'm actually doing a master's at Nottingham University online, which is mostly online. And the students, like, it's just like, it's all WhatsApp. All the communication is just like a WhatsApp group, you know. It's interesting. It's become a huge, I guess there's obviously WeChat and things and some other things in Line in Asia people use. But have you guys all found the same? It's gone crazy, that kind of back channel. Yeah, Jason.
Yeah, so I want to go back and say that actually, when it comes to our whole staff, we often will do a YouTube live stream. And then everyone can type in questions. Yeah. And we're using an application you may have heard of called StreamYard. And it allows you to have the questions pop up on the screen and different things. And you can share your screen. And so it's a lot like having Hangouts, but doing it in a live stream format. And so that's been really good to have that, because then you can have really high quality. Anyone from the world can listen in. It's unlisted. You could download it later if you wanted to and have it in your private server or whatever it is. And so we've used that for the large group, and then we move to a Hangout or Zoom sort of setting after that for per division or per group. So that's been good for us. I think folks are getting screen fatigue though. They're getting to the point where now that it's just like, I can't. So actually we're using the phone a lot more to actually call people so that we don't have to be looking at the screen to communicate. Yeah. And so that's been nice. The revival of the conversation, you know, the art of conversation, but yeah, so we've moved to having a live stream for the larger group, and they can type their questions in and then they can be answered in real time, or more of a conversational video conferencing set for smaller groups.
Yeah, it's interesting, the screen fatigue. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, for me, this is a little bit situation normal because we work globally and I'm always on Hangouts. But I know I was chatting to a friend of mine last night who works for Amazon. He's on, you know, working from home, all his meetings are video chat. And he just said he's exhausted after a day of video meetings. And it is much more tiring than interacting in person. You know, you in person, you can look around and, you know, you're in a kind of local environment. It's tiring, you know, and it is. And that brings me on to like, how have you guys found like staff well-being, student well-being? Have you seen issues? Obviously there's issues, but anything you've seen specifically and anything you found that could counteract it? Oh, what was that, Tim?
Yeah, so we've been like, we've got our small departments and things. So we're all like reaching out with each other. Beginning of the week, we'll have a whole faculty meeting right at the beginning of the week, just to, again, it's that routine. We normally do it anyway, so we're continuing to do it. And we'll have an all faculty and staff meeting every couple of weeks, which again, it's coming up this Monday. We're doing it. And we mix them up as well. So we use different tools like Mentimeter. We'll put that in there. We might do a flip grid. We might do a Padlet or something, just like you would in a normal meeting. You might have some flip charts on the board, right? Go away into your small groups, discuss things. We're doing that, but we're just doing it virtually and using it as an opportunity as well to highlight some tools that you could potentially use. We used a Kahoot the other day. Kahoot was more challenging because it's sometimes, depending on your bandwidth, there was a bit of a delay and people surprised how competitive teachers get, where they didn't have time to see the questions or what have you. But yeah, it's again trying to get as much into that routine of normality within what's going on. And I think people respond well to that. And I think that's partly looking after your well-being as well.
It's been interesting here, the headaches. It's just, I think, eye strain. A lot of teachers are complaining about the headaches because you're on screen 6-7 hours a day. And then for a lot of people, it's their entertainment too. You go on Netflix or you go do whatever. And so the amount of screen time, I think, for a lot of teachers has been pretty rough. The other thing we noticed here is there's a difference between if you've got a teacher who's single, who's at their home by themselves, versus people who are here with their families.
Yeah.
People that are with their families, I mean, maybe their kids are at home. It's driving them crazy, but they have kind of a little bit more of that network to support them. So I've seen our teachers here that are on their own, and they're literally on their own, and that's pretty isolating. So kind of checking on those people and making sure you're like, are you all right? Do you want to chat? That I think is important right now.
I think the grass is always green. I know friends now cramped into a small apartment with their family would love a bit of alone time, but then after a while, you know, like it gets a bit too much as well, you know? It's both are hard, you know? It depends how much, like you guys, the countries you're in, people generally live in pretty small places, you know? So that makes it harder for sure, you know? Jason.
Sorry, I just wanted to add one more thing is that educators in general tend to be very social creatures, you know, and part of the reason we're in the job we are in is that we like the social interaction and the human interaction. And so I think that's something that people are really, especially if their school was closed by surprise, that's something they're really yearning for and missing. And so, you know, trying to find opportunities to meet up with people, even virtually, is important, you know. And then, you know, my wife and I have set up, we have to go out for a walk at a certain time every day because it's just, we just have to, even if we're still busy, we just have to do it. And actually some more, you know, healthy lifestyle options. Actually, we've cooked a lot more at home and different things like that. So I'm really thinking the landscape of everyone's routine will be different from now on, almost, you know, at least in the new reality.
Yeah, I know. I hate that phrase, the new normal, but it is. And also because I think people now are thinking, well, you know, this is probably going to come back. It could come back next winter. There's probably going to be some closures again. Hopefully it'll be short next time. But I think, you know, every school now is having a strategy and to just deal with this again, you know, and because, you know, I guess like you mentioned before in Asia, you've had, this is not a new situation for you guys, you know, although it's surprising how many schools in Asia still haven't prepared for it, even though it does come around all the time, you know? Yeah.
So we are only having the conversation this morning, how this will change the future of education, the whole landscape of education, not, both with students, but also you mentioned there down the PD earlier as well, where it is, it always was a conversation for the last 5 years, people saying, where are we going with education when it comes to online learning? But now it's been proven, we'll see, maybe not, that's the wrong phrase, but it can work potentially. So it will be a big difference here when it comes to how we do go back. Even within the classroom, a lot more teachers now will be using that flipped learning model where the actual one-on-one time will be a lot more valuable now. So, and they can start like using Google Classroom, using Seesaw, to an advantage.
Great, guys. Let's for Thomas, and then we'll finish it off. Great. No, Thomas, jump in.
I just wanted to ask Tim, like you mentioned, like more teachers would go to that flip learning model, and that's kind of what I was thinking too, like putting materials up for kids and then like having more in-class time. Is that kind of what you see happening too, or?
I think something like that, it will come down to that idea where we have a lot of teachers we've discussed earlier about whether it's one-on-one teaching or whether it's you pre-record videos. Well, it's going to be that idea where you pre-record a video, send it out to students a couple of days before, and then it will come back and address that then. So you're almost answering questions. And that that idea of students learning to learn. So they're learning what they know, and then you're almost then just problem solving or any issues that they've got with it. So you're it's probably more beneficial with the skills that the students will acquire when it comes to all like lifelong learners and things like that.
Definitely. I think one thing this has shown everyone though is like there is no solution from I mean not that we didn't know anyway, but there's no alternative for in-person contact, you know. I mean it definitely there's a few things that will be taken to regular education, but you know, it's, I don't think anyone would want to continue, you know, in this situation for a long time, you know. I think it's genuinely a tough situation. Great, guys. Well, thank you very much. Great chat. We'll see how the audio sounds compared to Skype and look forward to having a catch up again in a few weeks, hopefully with an improved situation. So thanks, guys.
Cheers, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.